been talking about the Lord's Supper, and over the last couple of weeks, we've made a couple of detours trying to understand better the information that we have about the early Christians and their practices. And people have had questions as we've been going through this, which means that I have to go back and do more study. And so we've had these little detours, and that's good. That's the way it ought to be, that we can have these detours. So I was asked a question. We detoured a little bit to 1 Corinthians 16 in order to try to help us understand the frequency of the early church meeting. Now, I think that our practice is a practice that I would advocate. We gather every first day of the week, and we take the Lord's Supper. But there are some people who look at that, and this is, as we've said, they draw a different conclusion, that it doesn't necessarily have to be every first day of the week. So we tried to understand that a little bit. And we went to 1 Corinthians 16 to look at a similar situation where you had the early Christians who were making up a contribution that could be sent to the church in Judea that was going through a famine. And we looked at 1 Corinthians 16, 1 and 2, and we particularly were looking at verse 2, and someone made the observation that in the New American Standard Translation, it says every first day of the week, when that you should lay by in store on every first day of the week. And I had pointed out that I didn't know exactly where the every came from, what word in the original language was translated every. So I did some research to try to understand this. And this, what you see on the screen there, is that phrase from an interlinear translation that I was able to find. And this interlinear translation says, it just kind of confirms what I suspected but didn't know for sure, that this, the New American Standard translators got the term every from the word in the Greek that's K-A-T-A, and I don't know how to pronounce it. It's Strong's number 2596. The King James translators didn't pick that up that way. They have the word in the original, but they chose a more general definition for that word than every, which was chosen by the New American Standard translators, and I must say, a lot of other translators of this particular passage. So you can see it there. It's every first of the week. The term day is not there, but every first day of the week. And if you're interested, you see in the Greek, sabbatos, S-A-B-B-A-T-O-U, and how closely that's related to Sabbath, which is the seventh day, but it's a weekly thing. Okay. So I looked at the definition for 2596. Is it legitimate to translate that word every? And most authorities that I can fine would say, yes, that's a legitimate, a fair translation of this term 2596. But they point out it's not the only way to translate this word. And in fact, it's not even the predominant way that this word would be translated. Now, you know, if we're going to emphasize the idea that this is something that has to be done every first day of the week, then what we have to be able to show is that every is demanded as the translation of that word. And we can't show that. So we have to be more general in the way that we define that term. It could be every, but it's not necessarily every. In fact, I have the Strong's definition here on the screen for you. It says primary particle, a preposition, and then he gives all of these different illustrations of the way that this is used to modify different other words. Well, he gets down to the end of that definition where you have the bold print. He says, in composition, it retains many of these applications and frequently denotes, and this is the broad definition of that term, opposition, distribution, or intensity. So I think what the broadest way to understand this term, and this apparently I think is probably the way that the King James translators looked at it, because King James didn't use the term every. They probably looked at it as showing distribution. So it was this was a gathering that was made regularly throughout the time period that they were waiting for Paul to get there to pick it up. It was made regularly. It may have been made every first day of the week, but it doesn't necessarily suggest or doesn't necessarily mean that it had to be every first day of the week. So it was distributed. In other words, you didn't have this contribution taken up when the Apostle Paul got there, because that's what he says. I want you to do this in a distributed way, consistently, before I get there, so that when I get there, we don't have to take up the contribution. So they were taking it up. They were doing it regularly, and it was distributed. And in some cases, that might be every first day of the week. But we can't say that the wording itself in the original language that Paul wrote it in, we can't say that it necessitates every. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Now,
yes, it does.
I think every is a good way to do it. And for most of us who get a regular paycheck, that's pretty easy to figure out. That's pretty easy to understand. Every first day of the week, as we've been prospered, and we can calculate it. We might get a paycheck every 2 weeks, but we can calculate, okay, I earned half of it this week and I earned half of it next week. Or we might get paid once a month and you say, I earned a quarter of it the first week and a quarter of it the second. It's pretty easy for most of us to figure that out. Even when it gets to a long-term thing, like someone who's a farmer who profits when he sells his crop once a year. So he says, okay, I essentially earned 1/52nd of my total profit each week. So he can apportion it that way, and he can work with it that way. Now it gets a little more problematic when you talk about somebody who's in sales, for instance, and he doesn't know, he may work for a long time trying to make a sale, and it may not come to fruition. You know, I have known some real estate agents who worked for a long time on a particular sale, and they were going to make a handsome commission if they could get this sale to happen. And for one reason or another, the sale didn't happen. So in the case of a real estate agent, he has to say, well, I prospered this month, this much today, this week, and I don't know when I'll prosper next. So I can't take 1/52nd of that and contribute it each week. The best thing for me to do is every time I prosper, I contribute. Now, for most of us, that's not really an issue. But if you're I can imagine people. I have a friend who owns a business, and he has to bid to get customers. Well, sometimes he bids and gets it, and sometimes he bids and he doesn't get it, and sometimes you hit a lean spot and you don't get any for, you know, 2 years. Well, you have to weather that storm and just say, okay, I didn't prosper, but I put some aside from the last time that I prospered so I can keep going. And for that person, it probably makes more sense to say, I have prospered. I have determined that I'm going to give 15% of what I prosper to the work that the church is doing. And so when I get my big check, I give 15% of that. I don't keep it and contribute each week. I just give 15% right off the top. And I think that's a biblical approach. That's distributed, but it's distributed according to when you prosper, not necessarily distributed weekly. So let me open it up for questions at this point. At least I discovered that I was right, that every was coming from that term kata, but I had not researched that enough to say for sure.
Dean?
Yes.
Well, one thing is that I can't put it in the church coffers on Tuesday or Thursday. I can give it to somebody and say, put it in on Sunday because I'm not going to be here. But I can't put it into the church coffers any day but Sunday. And I think that's the important thing, is that when you're meeting, that's the day that he says you're supposed to do it.
Yeah, right. I think there's great value in that they did it on the first day of the week. Now, if a particular need arose, I can help meet that need. I may not meet it through the church, but if a need arises, I can meet that need on Thursday myself. And, you know, we've just been through Hurricane Ian hitting southern Florida. And there were people who lost everything to say, oh, I can't help you until Sunday. That doesn't make sense. We take up a contribution collective on Sunday, but that doesn't relieve me of the opportunity or the responsibility to respond to the people that are around me whenever they have need. And whenever I become aware of it. Now, why do we choose to do it weekly here at Coburg Road? Well, we have ongoing needs. We have to keep the lights on in the building. So that's an ongoing need. It's not like that's a need that exists one time, kind of like responding to the famine in Judea. That was a one-time response. In many cases, we have ongoing needs. So we keep the lights on. The church pays me to preach here. Helps to support my family. So we have ongoing needs, which we respond to in the same way. And the only way that I see the church ever meeting whatever the need was, whether it's a big one-time thing like the famine, or it's the ongoing needs that the church has, is through the free will offering of members. I don't see any other way that the church ever met its needs. Okay, let's get back to the practices of the early Christians as they related to gathering to participate in the Lord's Supper. That's kind of where we started. We have taken a couple of detours, but we're going to get back there. So this is the Troas example, Acts 20, verses 1 through 11. Again, let's sort of set the stage. Would somebody like to read Acts 20, verses 1 through 11, and then we'll go through it and we'll break it down a little bit?
I'll read it if you'd like.
Okay, go ahead.
Acts 20, 1 through 11, you said?
Yes.
Okay, and I'm reading from the New King James Version. After the uproar had ceased, Paul called the disciples to himself, embraced them, and departed to go to Macedonia. Now, when he had gone over that region and encouraged them with many words, he came to Greece and stayed 3 months. And when the Jews plotted against him as he was about to sail to Syria, he decided to return to Macedonia. And Soapter of Berea accompanied him to Asia. Also, Aristarchus and Secundus of the Thessalonians, and Gaius of Derbe, and Timothy, and Tychicus, and Trophimus of Asia. These men, going ahead, waited for us at Troas. But we sailed away from Philippi after the days of unleavened bread, and in 5 days joined them at Troas, where we stayed for 7 days. Now on the first day of the week, when the disciples came together to break bread, Paul, ready to depart the next day, spoke to them and continued his message until midnight. There were many lamps in the upper room where they were gathered together. And in a window sat a certain young man named Eutychus, who was sinking into a deep sleep. He was overcome by sleep, and as Paul continued speaking, he fell down from the third story and was taken up dead. But Paul went down, fell on him, and embraced him and said, "Do not trouble yourselves, for his life is in him." Now when he had come up and broken bread and eaten and talked a long while, even until daybreak, he departed. And they brought the young man in alive, and they were not a little comforted.
Okay. So let's kind of go through what they did here in Acts 20. We quote verse 7 a lot. We don't think about the rest of it always. So Paul is in Philippi. He sends his traveling companions ahead of him to Troas, and he stays in Philippi until, well, the language says he stayed there until after the days of unleavened bread. That's probably Passover. So then after he has stayed in Philippi for a while, he rejoins his companions in Troas. And he stays there for 7 days. That's verses 1-6. So on the first day of the week, the disciples gathered to break bread. That's the first part of verse 7. I think that's an indication of why they came together. They came together to break bread. I think that's the Lord's Supper. And we, you know, we base that on how we've understood Acts 2. So when they come together, Paul preached. That's the second part of verse 7. Paul is long-winded. Eutychus, sitting in the window, falls asleep, falls out of the window, and everybody assumes that he's dead. And then Paul said, in verse 10, it says that Paul reassured them, and he said, he's not dead. Now, I don't know, like I said before, I don't know whether Paul performed a miracle and brought him back to life, or whether he was not dead. It just knocked the wind out of him. Okay. And then verse 11 says this. They broke bread after he raised Eutychus. They broke bread and they ate. And then they went back upstairs and they continued to meet. So apparently in this case, they met all night. Well, we have concluded here at Coburg Road that we will break bread, take the Lord's Supper, and we will not eat a common meal together. Okay? We would not send people to their homes to eat a common meal and shame people that have not. We're not going to do that either. It's 1 Corinthians 11. But when they did this in Acts 20, they did two things. They came together and they ate. They broke bread and they ate. So here's verse 11 in the King James with the Strong's numbers indicated so it's easier to look things up. So they came together, they broke bread, and they ate. And then Paul talked for a long while, even until break of day, and he departed. Now, I don't know what time it was when they broke bread and ate, but it was long enough before the break of day that Paul continued to talk. So when we see this word eat, Strong's number 1089, this word is defined as, well, Strong says it's a primary verb. It means to taste and by implication to eat. I think they ate a common meal. They came together to break bread, and they did that. When they, verse 11 says, when they had broken bread, that's the same phrase that's in verse 7. They came together to break bread. It's the same basic phrase as you see in Acts 2. Remember, we've said breaking bread is a phrase that has two meanings. It could mean to eat a common meal. It could mean to eat the Lord's Supper. Now, I think my understanding of verse 11 is that when they had broken bread, when they had done what they came together to do, that was the Lord's Supper. And there was something else that they did. They ate. That wasn't the Lord's Supper. See, this eating is a very different word than the breaking bread. I don't think he's saying here in verse 11, I think it's a stretch to say that they broke the bread, which was the in our case, the matzah cracker, and then they ate the matzah cracker. I don't think that's what he's saying. That doesn't make any sense to me. They broke bread. That means they took the Lord's Supper. And then they ate. Or they, after they had done it and had eaten. It's different tense of the same word. So questions. We have chosen not to do this, and that's we don't eat a common meal. But there are a number of people who have read this passage and said, our practice needs to be like the early Christians in Troas. And so we do eat a common meal. Then the whole question is, can the two of us be together? Well, we're probably not going to worship in the same place because one of us eats and one of us doesn't. But what about a group of people who say, we're going to do what they did in Acts 20 at verse 11. We're going to take the Lord's Supper and we're going to eat. And then there's another group of people that say, we're going to eat the Lord's Supper. That's why they came together and we're not going to eat. Can those two groups of people accept each other and say we have different understandings? Or must we say, we can't have anything to do with you if you choose to eat? So questions. you know, in reality, this is part and parcel of the restoration movement and the history that we've been talking about. What happens when two people read the text and come to a different conclusion? And we'll talk about that. I mean, that is the basic division that exists within the restoration movement today. And we'll spend some time talking about it. You know, there are some people that won't have anything to do with Coburg Road because Coburg Road and the majority of the folks that worship here and the leadership here has read information about divorce and concluded something different than they have concluded. And so they won't have anything to do with Coburg Road. Is that necessitated or not? There are some folks that won't have anything to do with you if you teach that the book of Revelation deals with the destruction of Jerusalem in AD 70. They're convinced that it deals with the persecutions under Domitian in AD 90. And they won't have anything to do with you if you disagree with them. Questions? That's all I have. That's all that I wanted to cover this evening.